Welcome everyone, and thanks very much for turning up to this Digital Classes seminar at the Institute for Classical Studies. I guess I'll just go right ahead and introduce this week's speaker. Sandra Blakely from Emory in the States, come all the way just for this seminar, is going to speak to us about seafaring and the sacred, Mediterranean networks and the cult of the great gods of Samothrace.
Thank you. And for those of you who'd rather be at the beach, we have a lot of pictures of water today. So enjoy as close as we can get. I'm delighted to be here to present this. This is an ongoing project, and I'd really like to wind up with questions for you, particularly those of you who've been involved with the modeling side of building mathematical and statistical models for antiquity. The broader question is, taking something as apparently impenetrable and subject to subjectivity as the mystery cult of the great gods, and seeing precisely where some of the modern tools that we now have available can open a fresh chapter in the investigation. The mystery cult of the great gods of Samothrace was positioned geographically and conceptually at the edge of the Greek world. Intellectually, it's been placed at the intersection of classics and the social sciences. Its intellectual history offers us a series of snapshots of different stages in the long relationship between the two disciplines, and shows the long attraction to interpreting the cult as a ritual response to economic realities. Traditionally, these arguments have suggested that the metallurgy associated with the gods of the rites was the economic reality. These ideas grew out of the romantic and early anthropological excesses of the 19th century. The response to these has given rise to a certain hypercritical empiricism in approaches to the cult. The cult, however, was one of the most important mysteries of the ancient Mediterranean. It was second only to Eleusis in its prestige and longevity, in part because of the historical importance of the cult, and also in part because of the tools we now have available. I'm proposing that it's time to open a new chapter in this discussion between the Samothracian cult and, in this case, the tools coming out of the social sciences. This investigation focuses on the least secret aspect of the mysteries, which is the safety at sea promised to those who became initiates. This was as fundamental an element in the ancient economy as the grain of Demeter or the wine of Dionysus, and a deeply pragmatic concern. It's also a category in antiquity of a long-standing ritual type. There were a host of ritual responses to the need for safe seafaring, and Samothrace deserves to be enrolled among them. My essential hypothesis is very easy. It worked. Initiation at Samothrace did, in fact, position you for more safety in sea travel. The procedural hypothesis is that the social science tools for data management, storage, manipulation, and modeling will help us move beyond this hypercritical, specifically historically verifiable study to the question of what is socially and historically probable, and that this is a productive avenue to pursue. In the final analysis, after all, we're looking at a promise. And to sell the rights, the promise is more a matter of potential and likelihood than the kind of hard historical data that made Diogenes say cynically, if the Samothracian gods were better at their job, we'd have a lot more offerings set up to them from great sailors who were sailing to sea. There are a number of reasons that GIS technology in particular should be very good for going to Samothracian rites. And what we have visually here, you have two things. On the top, you have a paradigmatic model of what GIS can do, and at the bottom, we have network models. I'm using both of them to go at Samothrace, and they're very different ideas. GIS, as its name suggests, geographic information systems, is grounded in real topography. The advantage of it as a thinking system is, as you see here, you can layer information in at different levels. So if we're talking about the Samothracian cult, on one level, I can have the layer of all of the places around the Aegean seaboard that show mythic resonance with the Samothracian cult, places that claim gods associated with Samothrace with their own indigenous substrate. On a second level, I can have my ethnographic information for people who took on Theoria and Proxenia for Samothrace. At the next level, I can have initiates only. At the next level, I can have city-states that were involved in leagues with each other. This prevents us from the problem that you see here with what you're probably familiar with, the spaghetti monster approach to network modeling. When we layer in networks, it's true, we can have enormous amounts of fun, and the colored dots indicate places that are specifically connected. But the problem is, how do I make sense out of this? With that, I'm left at the end with as much of a mess as I began with. It's just codified in a different form. When you put the information on SAM3s into GIS, you're doing something very specific. GIS is tied to topography, it's tied to geography. The promise of SAM3s is about moving through space. So even at the most basic level, this seems like an appropriate way to go. And as we're going to see as we walk through the cult, the promises of the cult and the evidence for the cult are so complex, you want to avoid getting down to this kind of system where you can't see anything that's going on. The other fundamental distance between these, networks have to do with the question of human interaction. The center in a network is that which is visited most often. So you're recording numbers of contacts of human beings. The center of a network may not be geographically central at all. And that is another good reason for picking this up for SAM3s. One of the strangest questions about the cult, as you'll see, we are all the way up here. You see the Thayer on the Galway and the SAM3s. This is not a central location. And for those of you who traveled in the Aegean, the seas are always rough. It's very difficult to get to. It has a very poor harbor. How did this become the center of attention for all of this? You can take a very cynical political approach and say, it's the Macedonians. They wanted something to compete with Eleusis, which was the Athenian center, so they made Samothrace their center. That can be one level, but when we look at all the data that comes together at the end of this investigation, you can see that may be putting the cart before the horse. Do you patronize Samothrace and so make it great? Or was Samothrace already functioning to fulfill the kinds of promises that were distinct to it among all the mystery cults? And so was a natural choice for the Macedonians and the Ptolemies to put their money into. The nice thing, too, about these investigations that we're entering into the social sciences is, and this may sound unfair, but you can take me up with that later, there is a long trajectory whereby the good fruition of a good social science project is, I have new questions, I have new approaches, and it's very open-ended. And this is very much what even just 1 year of focus, can you hear me?
Okay.
I'll shout at them. This is one thing that even the relatively early stage I'm at in this project has done for me. It has rearranged the question of the cult. So with those things in mind, there are promise. Oh, that's much. Another one. There are a number of reasons why this is a natural thing to do with the cult of Samothrace. Other reasons that this is a natural for the cult is Samothrace is unusually rich in epigraphic evidence. All kinds of initiations are recorded all over the Aegean. The Aegean is full of proud stones that say, I became a mystic. The epigraphic habit on Samothrace is extraordinarily rich, unusually numerous, it seems, among the ancient cults, and relatively well preserved. Now, even relatively well preserved is still pathetic news when it comes to the question of networks. Networks are tools that come from studying the living. And to go to a social scientist and say, I want to build a network model. He says, great. And I say, I've got this many books of evidence. Wonderful. When did they get together? Somewhere between 200 BC and 200 CE. They walk out of the room. This is hardly what we would count as verifiable. This is really pathetic, would be another word. But here's where the problem, where we go back to the idea of probability. This is what we have. We create this model, and you keep this on the table along with the specific close-focused epigraphic studies, along with the prosopography. And even I'm hoping to move this towards the potential to do mathematical modeling to see the likelihood of, if I want to take a hypothetical initiate from site A and look at a hypothetical initiate from site B, based on the data I have, could Samothrace shorten the distance between them? This will not replace the kind of specific historical work we're looking at, but it opens up the discussion. And with all of this, the first step, of course, there are seats up here, if you'd like. The first step is putting our data in place. Even before that, I've learned through long experience, not everybody has spent the last 10 years reading about Samothrace. This never fails to shock me. So what I'd like to do is begin with a quick overview of the cult and the region so you know what our data are, and then we'll go from there to look at where the GIS is taking us, and finally take a look at three potential case studies to see what suggestions they make to us for how we can move ahead from here. Starting with the location, looking at this beautiful broad map of colonization in the Mediterranean, we are way up here in the northeast horn of the Aegean. Samothrace is positioned, I indicated at the start, at the boundary of the Greek world,
both physically and conceptually. If you asked a Greek fairly much anywhere in this area, what happens when I leave Samothrace and go to the mainland, to Thrace, they'll say, they don't speak Greek. These people are different than us. For all that the Greeks were, had hundreds of colonies around the Black Sea, you believe the various sources, this is a jumping off place beyond which I'm dealing with people who are not Greeks. And the curious thing is, too, that Samothrace celebrates a group of gods. They go by, they give the epithet to Phaoi Megalai, the great gods, a kind of euphemism that's not unusual when you're dealing with chthonic powers. It's not unusual when you have to keep a secret. There are many, many ancient sources declaring who the gods of the rites could be. There are more votes for possible affiliations for Samothrace than the other islands. But one thing is clear. These Phaoi Megalai, also known as Kabeiroi, are celebrated uniquely as the gods of mysteries on these three islands in this triangle at that area. They were celebrated on Imbros, the earliest of any of the cults, as in fact Strabo said that was the greatest of the sites of the Kabeiroi, where they had a mystery cult. Imbros, of course, now is Gutsiaga, it's Turkish. And investigations archaeologically in the island have been focused at the prehistoric. There has not been any firm identification of even the site itself. German epigraphers wandered around the island in the 19th century, claimed that up here on the north side of the island, in a deep mountain valley, is the most likely place. Epigraphic material recording honors to the great gods come from that area generally and are built into modern churches. This epigraphy is interesting. We know that they were called Kabeiroi, and if they were there, were called Kabeiroi Megalai from textual evidence. On the inscriptions, we get the additional information that these Phaoi Megalai were titans, which is something we don't have in any other place. They also have Iapetus, Poetus, and Hyperion. As I said, very little research has been done, unfortunately, because it was one of the greatest places for the cult. The Kabeiroi on Lemnos is relatively well preserved and relatively well excavated, as you can see here by the Italian excavations. Lemnos, as opposed to Samothrace, was an extraordinarily rich island. I said Samothrace is terrible. It has one very poor harbor. Lemnos has two remarkably good harbors, lots of arable land, which Samothrace doesn't have. The Kabeiroi is located at Chloe. You can see it here on the northern side of the island. The inscriptions found at the site show that this was the place, even though you're, again, removed from the town, you're not exactly in a valley, in fact, you're clinging to the edge of the cliff, but you come over a hill from the main town to get to Samothrace. The epigraphic record there is where you put records of emancipation, records of land deals. All kinds of civic goings on are going on, are being recorded in the mystery cult. The Kabeiroi on Lemnos seems to be slightly older than the one on Samothrace, although it's debated, and our evidence is ceramic. The G23 ware, which shows up on Lemnos, has been connected with the G23 ware found at the earliest levels at Samothrace. In the texts, we have clear evidence that these are, they're not called titans, but they are the gods of the previous habitants. When Jason and the Argonauts put in at Lemnos, they met drunken Kabeiroi, who wanted more to drink. And they came out, the sailors, saying, please, anything, a cup, a bottle, a jug, anything, you have anything to give us? And Philostratos in his Heroicos tells us how the Kabeiroi were the indigenous spirits of the island who fled in horror after the crime of the Lemnian women, and then would be brought back when the island was purified, and that this was acted out on an annual basis. So on Lemnos, again, we have a pre-Greek substrate. We have a really very well excavated sanctuary. We have an epigraphic record that shows local importance, but there's a really intriguing difference. Graham studied the sanctuary on Samothrace and a sanctuary on Lemnos. And he pointed out, these two cults go in a very different direction when the Athenians come in the 5th century BC. The cult on Lemnos starts to look more like an Attic cult after the Greeks come in. They throw open the doors to the incomers, and they start to hold things like nighttime festivals, which they didn't hold before, apparently in order to make themselves more user-friendly for the Greeks who are coming in. On Samothrace, the evidence is that as more and more Greeks came in to the island and to the site, the direction of the cult went in the other direction. You have more invocations of the archaic and the local and the Thracian. And in fact, on Samothrace, it appears that the indigenous pre-Greek, non-Greek language was used in the cult all the way through the Hellenistic into the early Roman period. So you have this artificial archaizing, emphasizing we're not quite like everybody else. Here's Sound Thrace from the Sea. I've given it a hard time because it has a very poor harbor. What it has that's terrific for sailors is the mountain. This is the tallest mountain in Greece, and it can be seen, well, on a clear day from Troy. And if you climb all the way to the top of the mountain and it's a clear day, you can see Troy. If you remember, Homer said that Poseidon sat on the top of Mount Saos in order to watch the battles on the plain of Troy. The habits of ancient seafaring are that you need to navigate with something you can see from a long distance. And one of the longest standing hypotheses about Samothrace and the safety granted to sailors is it was a convenient point for navigation. And that could be part of the explanation. If you wanted to compare Samothrace to Delos as far as an island, there was a ritual center where lots of people get together and connections are made. At Delos, of course, you've got one of the most important markets in the ancient Mediterranean. Samothrace had great onions to export. They must have been fantastic. And a flaky black stone, that was it. I mean, as far as exports, it relied on its pariah for its daily getting along. If it didn't have that, it couldn't have survived. But what they do seem to have been very good at is trading with the people on the mainland. Petruzzi called the Samothracians the pioneers of Idrisian trade. And this is where those language issues come in interesting ways. A series of epigraphic material, I don't think I put one here on the slides, ceramic potsherds from the island, inscribed in Greek letters but in a non-Greek language, have been identified as representatives of the Thracian language based on a large cache of materials found at Zoene on the mainland, which were in Thracian. So think about this conceptually. If I come to Samothrace, I'm putting myself into a cult where, in the course of the mysteries, which are naturally open to shifting identities, I am beginning to speak like a Thracian. When I leave Samothrace and go to the mainland, I'm encountering a place where Thracian is the language. I have begun to conceptualize Samothrace as a place where this mediation, potentially an idealized mediation, between incoming Greeks and the Thracian substrate can be seen in the mysteries. Signs that it is deliberately trying to be archaic are the Bothroi and Eshera, which are as abundant in Samothrace as I've seen in any Greek site. You're looking here, the pink dots are places where you have Bothroi. Two of them here in the middle of the Hall of World Dancers. This is a building that goes back to the 7th century BC based on ceramic evidence found out of this sort of burning. One for liquid, one for burnt offerings. Here in the end of the Hieron, behind the apse of the Holy of Holies, you don't have a statue, but you have a hole in the ground, a nicely kept hole and a bit of bedrock coming up beneath. You have rock altars here outside the Arsinoeum. You have a carefully placed rock that seems to be the object of libations inside the building 23, the Anactorum. You also have rock altars here in the altar court. Samothrace is full of all these, again, deliberately archaizing kinds of installations. Outside the Rotunda of Artinoe, this shaft was very carefully built to give access to, again, a very carefully placed stone at the bottom. This pit is about 3 meters deep, and at the bottom was a substantial amount of burnt earth, burnt bones, ram's horns, suggesting a Pythonic offering. And here at the upper right-hand corner is the end bit of the Anactorum. So you have a lot of archaizing going on in Samothrace. Two final bits of archaizing: a lovely Mycenaean-style doorway built into the retaining wall for the theater, which goes nowhere. There's nothing inside. There's no tomb. But it seems to have been built into a fairly late wall, 2nd century or so, in order to give the impression of very, very deep antiquity. You also have around the Hall of Coral Dancers one of the earliest examples of an archaizing style of relief. You can notice the hairstyle and the pose of the women. So with all of that, you can have an argument for Samothrace at a fairly subtle level, helping business negotiations between incoming Greeks and all these people in the mainland that they're going to come in contact with. That's very subtle. What's not subtle at all is your ship won't go down if you get initiated in the Samothracian cult. Already in the 5th century BC, Aristophanes' characters are making a joke about the fact the Samothracian initiates know how to stay safe at sea. Diogenes, the cynic, was said, as indicated earlier, that the gods weren't very good at what they did, or they would have had more offerings. One of the most striking examples of this is the Nike of Samothrace. As you know from the flyer and from the bottom part of this picture, is perched on the prow of a Rhodian trihemiola. And so it's specifically got to do with victory at sea And one of the most remarkable buildings on the site is the Neorion. There are only three examples of these known in the Greek world. An enormous building in order to hold a ship that was set up as a votive for the god. Considering the value of that votive, we don't know what it was for. Was it a ship that successfully fought the pirates? We have inscriptions on cemeteries where the crew of a pirate fighting ship all got initiated together. Was it a token out of a successful trade fleet? Was it a particular battle? We don't know. But this kind of memorial is a remarkable statement. This was no secret. The Samothracian gods kept you safe at sea. Now, I indicated earlier, there's a lot of ways that you can keep safe at sea besides being careful. In ritual, that would be the obvious one, farm. the most ritual ones that you may know from easy familiarity, the eyes, the Abatrothaic eyes on the ships. There are shipboard altars and shipboard shrines attested in both Canaanite and in Greek examples. Wonderful examples of magical gems carved with ships and sea monsters, and information from the Orphic Lithica that specific stones are especially good for keeping you safe at sea. There are myths that go into the fantastic. Also, the Nautilus, who will show up as a helpful fish and scoot along the surface of the sea and help out sailors. And of course, Orion, coming from the nearby island of Methymna, where there was a very strong Samothracian connection, a dolphin shows up and saves his life when he's in trouble on the sea. You could also look at the more pragmatic side, that the single best way to keep yourself safe against the physical risks of the sea is information. Morton has argued this very emphatically in his study of the ancient Greek maritime world. Very often when ships put into port, when they're about to go from one zip code, as it were, to the next zip code, you take on a new pilot who's familiar with the area where you're going. Face-to-face communication about what was always a change in reality in terms of the surface of the sea was the best way to counteract that. In mythological terms, it's the Dioscuroi, who are supposed to show up above the mast of your ship as an electrical charge and keep you safe at sea. As early as the 6th century, they are associated with what we now call St. Elmo's Fire. And there were some very inventive ideas in the 19th century that magnetized Samothracian ring that you got as a token of your initiation was an ancient discussion of the powers of magnetism and the electric. Yeah, you should roll your eyes. Halle was a great university around 1901. They've got all kinds of ideas. But they show up in the myths. That's all to do with the physical dangers at sea. There's also a human danger at sea that was as overwhelmingly important, and that's piracy. And the pirates, particularly along the coast where you have these Samothracian initiations, were a force to be reckoned with from a very early time. If you want to think of the best way to avoid pirates, besides bringing on board good armed soldiers, an intriguing social technique for going at it were the institutions of Theria and Proxenia. Because with Theria and Proxenia, Gabrielson has argued this, and so has Davies, and it's a very workable hypothesis, those two institutions are an effective counter to the right of seizure. The way the argument reduced to its most simple goes is this. If I am a citizen of state A, and one of my fellow citizens has been seized at sea, held by pirates, sold into slavery by a representative of state B, I have the right to get recompense for that by seizing myself, anybody from state B. And so I've brought things back full circle. This is a very simplified, reduced model of this. It got to the point where it was very difficult to tell whether that kind of seizure was recompense or aggression in the first place. But what Davies has argued is that one of the most effective counters to this was proxeni. Because when a citizen of state A is then acting as a proxenos for his fellow members over in state B, he can prevent this kind of seizure from taking place. I'm giving you a very quick outline of this capacity. But this is where the currents follow the argument goes. And it's an appealing proposal when it comes to Samothrace when you think about the need for safety at sea. To the extent that the safety at sea was a matter of human action, of piracy, the proliferation of Theria and Proxenia coming out of Samothrace coincides with that danger and can be seen as a counter against it.
this is a hypothesis, and it needs a lot more specific case studies to support it. But I like the idea for its appropriateness to Samothrace. The epigraphic record for Samothrace, I said at the beginning, is one of the most abundant that we have in the Mediterranean for a mystery cult, particularly when it comes to Thavia and Proxenia. It comes after the major architectural expansion of the sanctuary from the 4th to the 3rd centuries BC. The bulk of the inscriptions, unfortunately, are dated only by letter style. And the dates are necessarily approximate between the 2nd century BC and the 2nd century CE. We have a total of 250 names on Samothrace for Theoroi. I have 28 inscriptions. For initiates, for Mystes, we have 700 names. Most of the records for the Theoroi are coming from the blocks that seem to be the side of a building. The Theoroi's inscriptions typically include the city of origin. These wall blocks are usually 35 meters high. These are not considered to come inside from inside the sanctuary. The likelihood that they were adorning the walls of a building that was set up inside the town of Samothrace itself seems a reasonable hypothesis. The interior of the town of Samothrace has not been excavated. Very little survey work has been done even. We have spectacular city walls, which give us an idea of the size, but beyond that, we can't say much. The inscriptions that record Theros and Proxenos together are on stones listing a number of cities. We'll see an example in a little bit. So you see a city name, two names beneath it, and another city name, two names beneath it, and so on. When you have an inscription saying Theros and Mystai, usually you have one city per stone. It seems that these were set up by the Samothracians themselves, and that these were set up by the individual cities who had sent their representatives. Out of the stones recording initiation, we have 87 that give us a city of origin. And we have 54 that do not give us any city of origin at all. Oh gosh, and there go the columns. I apologize. The transfer of my PowerPoint to this surface has to this machine, which has messed this up slightly. We have inscriptions beyond the site as well, which give us information about the topographic spread of the Samothracians around the Asia Minor. We have records of Samothracian koina, of Samothracian priests, and Samothracian shrines or temples. Koina at Alai, Rhodes, Lindos, Mithymna, Syme, and Teos, the priests from Delos on down, and I apologize, as I said, for the far side, the priests, Delos, Dionysopolis, Istros, Chalcedon, Carpathos, and Lindos, Milassa, Olbia, Rhodes, and Tomis. And I will be happy to repair this slide before I post it online so you can all have a complete listing of what the sites are. The temples are firmly attested at Delos, in literary texts at Ephesus, Istros, Kalatis, Odessos, Philadelphia, Seothopolis, very interestingly, very far up in Thrace, and Estratonikeia. With all of these things, we are dealing with something that has a lot of caveats involved. When I was plotting these on the map, I did my best with the Barrington Atlas and with investigations of where exactly on Google Earth you can find the remains of a sanctuary, where you can find the remains of the town. This was one of the places where it was obvious how great the gap between modern GIS technology and what we have for Samothrace. All it says on the stone at Samothrace is, I have an initiate from Teos. That's an entire location. I can't tell you the exact spot, even though that's what GIS is designed to work with. The dating I've indicated is almost always problematic. What you can see when you put all these together is that creating a GIS database, this is one log, one image of what I have at this point in terms of creating the GIS database to hold the information that we have about Samothrace that's coming out of the epigraphic record. This, each dot here represents a cell. The cell represents a site that's mentioned on Samothrace with an on-site inscription, or that also is mentioned in a literary text. And as you can see, it's geographically oriented. They cluster overwhelmingly along the Asian Minor coast. When they come from as far away as Rome, chances are good that they were Romans who were stationed up in the area as
as military people, as political representatives, but they still identify themselves as Romans. I have 99 sites overall. Into each of these, as I said, the data can begin to be entered. Being located on the coast, one thing comes immediately to mind as you look at this information. The connections to Samothrace up here were coming out of largely port towns. And each of those port towns were trading nodes which were hubs of their own individual networks, hubs to which ships came, from which they went out. And they articulated their connections to other city-states in terms of myths of kinship, trade, and treaties. The festival on Samothrace, in network terms, was us bringing together the representatives of the nodes for whom the gods guaranteed space in between. Backing up, the festival at Samothrace. When we think about Samothrace and Eleusis, there's one important distinction to make between them. At Eleusis, initiation comes when you come to the festival. Everybody gets initiated together. I can say with confidence, if two of you were initiated in the same year, that you were at Eleusis at the same time, on the same number of days. On Samothrace from the 3rd century BC on, it's evident that initiation happened when a ship put into port. It could be held on demand. So you would have a much, much smaller number of initiates together. When we look at the stones recording miss days, we cannot even guarantee that they were in the sanctuary together, because there wasn't ever graphic habit at Samothrace, but I wouldn't bother setting up a new stele if a perfectly good one was there and I could add my name to it. So I may put my name and where I'm from, but it doesn't mean I'm necessarily met people there. So it's very difficult to say that any of these people were physically together for initiation, but there was an annual Samothracian festival. This is where the Theoroi were sent to watch. And however many of them came together for a given festival in the year would have had the capacity to meet, to shake hands, to rub shoulders, to strike deals. And that's one way in which Samothrace would enable networking among these sites, the kind of face-to-face interaction that the festival would uniquely provide. Again, going to the idea of the festival in the area, I want you to step back and think about the relationship between the Mystes, who's expecting to be saved at sea, and what the Theria and Coxnia could do. The individual Mystes, when he leaves Samothrace, has made an extraordinarily strong contract with the gods. If he breaks his oath, the ship will go down. That's a pretty strong oath, and the textual evidence supports that. For the Theria, they have a bond to the sanctuary because they're representing Samothrace as proximally when they get to their hometown. Just as when they are sent from their hometowns to Samothrace to represent their hometown, they are acting on their behalf there. To clarify, on the epigraphic material, not every inscription that says Theoria also reads proximia. The stones are heavily damaged. The consensus, based on Susan Cole and more recently on Nora Dimitrova, is that it seems to have been customary to grant proximia along with Theoria. So in a nutshell, what the individual Mystes is bound to through his initiation to the gods of the rites, the Theoria and Proxenia carrying people are bound to the state of Samothrace at the civic level. So Samothrace is generating connections at the individual level of the Mystes and at the city level of the Theoros and Proxenos. And the kind of security against the risks of the sea that the Theoros and Proxenos can guarantee at the civic level, the individual Mystes articulates through a hope for the diaspora to come to him. What the individual wants from the gods, the city-states can ask from each other in legal and social terms. We know that there was a strong cultural sensibility for how much safety at sea did, in fact, rely on a good base on mainland, a good base on the shore. If you read the tale of Wenamun as early as the 9th century BC, coming out of Egypt, poor Wenamun goes from port to port to port. He never has a ship go down, but in port, he loses everything. The tale of Odysseus and the Lystragonians, putting into port can be as dangerous as being on the high sea. To the extent that the Samothracians were creating this network with each other, they could counteract that. At this point, that all sounds very reasonable. And you could absolutely say
Sandy, you spent months and months putting information and coordinates into a GIS database to make a map, which is just an illustration of where the sanitation extent goes to. How can you use this critically? How can you use this to test the hypothesis and to think hard about sanitrace? To go at that question of getting some tests, I want to look at three possible case studies, look at three of the points, and see what we have that we could layer in, what the data give us, and what kinds of proposals I can make to us. Make for us. The first comes from the Temenos of Artemidorus of Perigae on the island of Thera. He's dated to the 3rd century BC. Artemidorus was an international man of business. He was born in Perigae. He set up this altar on Thera throughout his life. It seemed that the inscriptions were put up in sequence. He was born at Perigae. He makes an altar to Priapus of Lampsacos. He has another altar to the nymphs of Libya. He constantly proclaims his services to the Ptolemies in Alexandria, and he is made an honorary citizen of Thera near the end of his life. The very last altar he seems to set up is at the end of his life, and it is to Artemis, the goddess of his home city. If you wanted to take this as one node, you could say, from this node, I have connections, viable connections, to these cities around the Aegean. The test we would like to know is, when he went to Lampsacos, which is a city that also shows up in two inscriptions recording Thera on Samothrace, was his route made easier because there were Samothracians there and he had the affiliation? That's a test. We don't have the data to fulfill it, but it's one example of when the hypothesis comes out. Similarly, if a fellow Samothracian were going to Perigae, would he be able to cite Artemidorus' name in order to open doors? He's a relatively rich individual, and we don't get many individuals to give us that much information. The site of Kyzikos gives us a lot more examples of things to play with. Kyzikos was one of the most important cities of Asia Minor. It's an especially articulate place for Samothracian connections and an inherently rich harbor town. It has two harbors right and left. I'm sorry, I apologize for the exits marking them up. It has 9 inscriptions showing its connections with Samothrace. And the city considers itself, if you look at Alien Aristides, as the meeting point of two seas, as is appropriate. You're on the south shore of the Propontis here, so you move from the Mediterranean through the Propontis to the Black Sea. So it is a site with a very strong maritime orientation. The city was a foundation of Miletus historically. In mythological terms, it thought of itself as a foundation of King Kyzikos, who was, who was expelled by the Aeolians, leading the Pelasgians out of Thrace. King Kyzikos had a visit by the Argonauts. King Kyzikos welcomed them, entertained them, got a relationship of guest friendship with them, and then in an unfortunate series of events was accidentally killed by Jason himself. In the ritual that was meant to put that whole problem to sleep, some interesting indications of a local tradition of gods associated with Samothrace come into the picture. When the Argonauts go up to the Mount of Bears in order to perform the expiation, they are greeted, among others, by the Idaean Dactyloi, who Ephorus in the 4th century said were Samothracian gods. Von Fritz argued in the early 20th century that among the coins of Kyzikos are some that show a Kyberos, both bearded and unbearded, with the pilos and the stars, which identify them with the Osteroid. 4 of the inscriptions on Samothrace date themselves by officials at Kyzikos as well as the local Samothracian official. So you have a very strong relationship between this site and the island. When you look at what the data on Kyzikos gives you, you can see it's relatively slender. Here's an example of one of the stones from our building in the center of town, recording Thera and Proxenium in the 2nd century BC. You can see the Phocaeans, the Dardanians, and over here, the Kyzikans, 2 names, Nicobines Ataluk, son of Apollos, and Meandros, son of Agenor. This individual gives us an unusually rich link into the prosopography of the site itself because of his last name. The last name, son of Atlas, also shows up in connection with 2 of the other Samothracians that record Kyzikian initiations. One is Aristogenes, the son of Atlas, and he shows up again under an adopted name, which still acknowledges his name is Aristogenes, on a second stone.
Aristogenes, the son of Attalus, was an architect, and he was summoned to Samothrace, we are told, for the sake of the sacred images. And he is sent as a special envoy to do special sacrifices. He seems to be associated as well with the architect, potentially, of one of the most important buildings of Samothrace. Three out of the five initiation recording Byzantine initiates have this image on them. This image doesn't show up on any other stone. This is a copy of one inscription by Syriac Spanicola. This is a stone now in the Museum of Samothrace, and this is at Sussex, a Vignor Park relief. You can see that you have a doorway with pillars on the side with snakes wrapping up them. In the center of them, the pillars look more like torches, potentially. And on the right-hand side, which is almost completely erased, you can see that they are there as well. That building shows up on the imperial period, or their analogous building, coins of Cyzicus. Here's the clearest example of it. And you can see that the building is round, it's the roof, the three figures on the top, and you have these characteristic snakes and torches at the side. And we have a funeral stele for Attalus, the son of Asclepiodorus, so potentially the same Attalus who was the father of this person who went to Samothrace twice. He is lying here on a couch at his feast, and look at what the little slave girl is holding. She's holding a round building, which you just can see in close up here is very much like the rotunda of Arsinoe. This is as close to solid as we can get in terms of trying to cross positively from Samothrace. It does seem that one particularly elite high-class family went to Samothrace a number of times. They had connections. Possibly they were descended from the architect himself of the great Tholos. But if you want to do more with Cyzicus, to ask what did that connection with Samothrace do for Cyzicus that hadn't been there before, you can look at the broader issues of the city. They were visited by the Argonauts, and they could lay claim to a strong element of Argonautic history in who they were. The Argonauts were used with remarkable frequency in the Greek cities among the Black Sea to express connections with each other. Do we need to open windows, by the way, to at least you're asleep? Do you want air?
I'm keeping moving.
Let's open the windows. Yes. It's very small. Do you want the door open as well? Oh, you can't hear me?
It's the air conditioning.
Okay, I'll be happy to speak up more. I apologize for the sound. So, if you were living at Cyzicus, you had two other significant cultural mechanisms by which you would network yourself to people around the Black Sea and in the region. The myth of the Argonauts is one of these. Jonathan Paul indicates, I love his phrase, every self-respecting Black Sea city could claim an Argonaut. And Lord Kipanidze and others have, and David Braun in particular, have done a lot of work showing you use that myth to make the pathway easier. Jason and the Argonauts, predictably, were given a Samothracian initiation from about the 4th century BC on. So that already connected them to Samothrace. A second mechanism for connecting them to each other was the status of Miletus as a mother city. Miletus was known as the A number one prime colonizer of the cities around the shores of Asia Minor, and that would also ease the way for these cities to interact with each other. So what, and Samothrace also had initiates from Miletus. So at that point, the benefit of getting into the Samothracian network is just coterminous with those two, until you consider on Samothrace, I'm also linking up with Rhodes. I'm also linking up with Thera. I'm also potentially going as far to the west as Rome. So the question would be, in terms of what we do with GIS, think back to those layers. If I make a GIS layer on this map that shows all the daughter cities of Miletus, how many of them, when they came to Samothrace, found themselves that much closer to someone in the southern Aegean? They'd be no closer to their own colleagues than they were before, but the potential for a smaller network to come to Samothrace and have that one link that connects it to another network in the southern Aegean makes Samothrace, what you call in network terms, a supernode. That it shortened that distance is remarkable. Is this the never-ending classicist cry? If I only had more data, if I had enough data to do some real close crystallographic studies and say, this person from Cyzicus ordinarily had to go through this many steps to get down to Rhodes, but coming to Samothrace, it closed it would be great. That is where the potential And here I'm looking for collaborators, I'm looking for statisticians and modelers to create a hypothetical Kizikim and a hypothetical Rhodian and see the likelihood of sound trace reducing the number of links between them. And that would help turn sound trace into a supernode like this. What do you want to find? 5 minutes? Okay. For another example, going to Rhodes. As an example of these two, by the way, Rhodes and Kizikus are the two best attested sites epigraphically for sound trace. Pity me. Okay? This is as good as it gets. On Rhodes, we have a fairly strong indication of initiation on sound trace, the most exciting of which is this stone, one side of which has Kiz, and then it's broken off. So between that and the building, the stone seems to have the Kizikins on one side. On another side, it has one lonely Roman. And on the other side, it has a list of individuals who are argued to be from Rhodes on this basis. Restoring Rhodioi right here, based on the fact that the individual in line 19 shows up as well on other Rhodian records. So, does that seem like a stretch? It's as far as we can go. But it's potential that on one stone I have people from Rhodes and people from Samothrace, although as I know, that gets me nothing in terms of being able to say they actually met up at the island. The other stone promising possible connections between them is similarly slender. But what Rhodes does have, better than any other island in the Aegean, is koina, these organizations for Rhodians to come together. Rhodians were very good at making koina. They liked to do this. It suited their purposes. There's nothing about Samothrace in particular that says go home and make a voluntary organization. But on Rhodes, they did this. And here's where Gabrielson's work has been very interesting. Koina are recognized by many scholars as a way to give access to people who are living abroad to come together in a certain place and be able to access noble families, other foreigners, strike business deals, and move forward. Rhodes has six different flavors of Samothracian koina. They show you how flexible a type this is. You have the koina of the Samothracians and the lovers of Aphrodite. You have the koina of the Samothrakiastai and Nicostration Sumistai, people who were initiated together with Nicostration. You have a group of Samothracian rowers who acted together, another group of people who sailed together under the same admiral and so made Samothracian koina. And finally, a motley crew of Rhodians and 36 foreigners called the Aranistai, Samothrakiastai, Aristobuliastai, Hermiastai. And this Aristobulos also, on another stone, set up another group of Samothracians. Samothrace was a convenient tag to play with. It's not that anything in this group suggests we're safer than anybody else at sea, but it would send a signal to anyone seeking access into Rhodes of the potential for finding someone who also has that link to Samothrace. One of the compelling arguments is that these organizations pragmatically enable long-distance trade because of the bond of trust that's created between them. If I know you from a cult association, then under the aegis of a god and risking his wrath, you know that I'm the person who pays for my sacrifices, pays for my liturgies, takes care of the burial plot, does all the things. We have a trust because you have seen that I behave, I do my work. Imagine how much greater that trust is in a cult where if I lie, my ship goes down. And in a cult where I have to confess the worst thing I ever did in the course of initiation. This is a particularly fun aspect of Samothrace. So it seems that one way in which these organizations would be especially effective is cashing in on that part of the Samothracian semantic context. So winding up, these are a range of possibilities of questions we can go at with Samothrace. There's a perennial problem when you're trying to bring, if we go to the statistical mode, if I go to the idea of building up this hypothetical Rhodian and hypothetical Kizikian, there's a real problem there because I'm getting very mathematical, very quantitative about stuff that we know doesn't deserve to engender any sense of trust or belief in me. But by having this database where I am able to see the pragmatic, literally written in stone evidence around the Aegean, and not only the epigraphic evidence, but also the other information about those sites, I offer myself a constant access back to the primary data on which any model should be built. So it's an effective stall against that. I hope you can see from what I've said that if you have the potential as well to test the hypothesis with Saturn Thrace a supernova, again, you may be able to come back at the cult and say, yes, it had some of the richest patrons in the Aegean making that site an architectural marvel. But did their architecture make it great, or was there something there already on the ground that made it work? The location of Samothrace and the ancient myths that underwrite it suggest to me that there is indeed a very pragmatic promise here, keeping people safe at sea. To the extent that it was the human network that did that, as opposed to the Dioscuroi, then every sailor, every ship's captain, every initiate who made the trip to Samothrace to ask the gods to keep them safe, in point of fact, was making the network that did that work on its own. Thanks for your time, and I would love your questions. And I apologize for the bad acoustics.
It's your fault.
I can always talk louder.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Can I start?
Yes, please.
Your map here, the GIS map, obviously I've seen a dot in Cyrene.
Yes. What made me put that dot there?
Yeah, first of all, I just wanted to see whether actually what I thought the dot is for.
Tell us.
First of all, and I'm not really specialized in Cyrene, but from an observation, in the Agora, near the tomb of Battus, King Battus,
yes,
who was the founder. King Panda of Cyrene. There's a ship with the Samothracian lookalike. Sitting in the brow. That is the same you have in the masterpiece of Samothrace. First of all, Cyrene is not really famous for its fleet of ships and trade and everything. It's actually. They deal in the Cilbium and export Cilbium, but I don't think they have their own ships as such, or they have a strong navy or something. So whether there's a Samothracian link here,
yes,
and dealing with the transport, and obviously, as you mentioned earlier, there's they come to Libya for the nymphs.
Yes.
There isn't anymore. But I don't know whether this link is just my imagination.
No, I don't think it's your imagination. Or if it is, someone else out there shares your imagination. I would love to get the reference from you on that. This link, I'll have to go back. As I said, it was October, I put it in. Mm-hmm. This link was epigraphically based. So rather than the image. There's also, since then, I have found a wonderful description on Rhodes, which refers to the Libyan coast. Diopathes is made a priest of the Samothracian gods, and he's setting up this stele to thank the gods, because with their help he saved a trireme off the coast of Libya. Mm. Which is unusual, because usually with the Samothracian, thanks to the great gods, I wanted to show you this, there are only two inscriptions that say specifically the gods kept me safe at sea, and they are from Apamea Kibotos, right here,
yes,
and Koptos in Egypt. I think of Odysseus and his oar, because these places are so far inland that it's very unlikely that they'd be surrounded by people who had rowed together or a single ship's crew who were initiated together.
But do you see that it's odd, really, to have this monument for
I think it's wonderful.
In the middle of not a non-ferry nation? Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I couldn't really stop thinking of Samothrace and like the Freemasons.
Wow, tell me why.
No, I mean, they all have these links, and obviously you made these links, and they have the trust between them and the world.
Oh, yes.
And this bond and these rules and regulations. I'm not saying that they're not, just sort of analogies.
No, and actually, it's a wonderful comparison. I thought of a lot of people I shouldn't have when I was began to put this together and see the data. It immediately dissolves any separation a person might want to make between pragmatic economic interest and mystic initiation. Because the fact that, you know, in the inner room of a Masonic temple, are business deals struck? I don't know. But because I don't want enemies, I'm not going to pursue that one particularly. But I thank you. I can give it to a student for term two. It's Friday, it's warm. Yes.
My interest in this is from the proxeneer side of things.
Oh, yes.
I work on proxeneers in particular, and this material from the Tamar Curious is very interesting. I see how the mysteries could function in creating trust and potentials to create and potential links,
yes,
between individuals active in various different non-cultic contexts. I have some issues with how this works from the point of view of proxeneer, which was of course much of the best evidence from Samothrae, because these seem to me to be very much links which are quite strong between two places but don't really join up otherwise. So that someone is a Samothracian proxenos, but that doesn't give anyone else who doesn't happen to be from, who doesn't happen to be from Samothrace, even if they have a Samothracian connection, an immediate entry into him in his role as proxenos. And I wondered what difference it would make if, as I think is quite probable, many of the cities of the Aegean had quite extensive proxy networks reflecting the extent of their own interests, or rather the interests of their citizens, which, if we had more evidence, would look very much like what we have at Samothrace.
This is exactly a place where I have a lot more research to do, and what you identify is exactly the question. The thing we can't answer is whether or not, if, let's say, I have through one of these various means a formalized connection with Samothrace, even potentially the little magnetized iron ring, and I find myself in a place with a Samothracian proxenos, is that a source of help to me? And again, data would be nice.
And I think it would perhaps depend a lot on the proxenos. I can see why, if that person were a religious initiate, that iron ring might make the difference. But I'm not. But in that case, it would be less the proxeneer and more the religious side of things.
Yes, and there has been an enormous amount of very tormented discussion on whether or not you can say that a proxenos or a theros was actually an initiate. And I think in many ways they may have been more powerful, and they wouldn't necessarily have had to bother. Although given the friendliness with which the Samothracians said, "I'm on the ship, we'll initiate you," it seems it would have been a fairly easy matter. But no, this is precisely the kind of problem where we can go so far and then say the rest is...
Because initiates look quite like, from your model, they look like ship owners and sailors, whereas proxenoi typically are members of their local civic elite. And that, of course, is quite a...
Yeah, it's interesting. Among our inscriptions, particularly in the Roman period, you'll get an entire household, and you have the senator or the local Roman muckety-muck and his wife and his children and the person who takes care of the curtains and the person who sailed the ship, and you have the ship's captain and you have the ship's crew, and you get this sense of enormous... I mean, that's not networking that helps you at all, but I think it's the cult operating at a very different level. And I really don't know. It's a very good question. Yes?
I wanted to ask about your layers.
Yes.
In relationship to your map.
Yes.
Is that one of your layers, or can that map be broken up into layers?
It will be able to be broken up into layers. As far as I managed to get on this project so far, is I have engaged a wonderful tech support person. And he is working with me, and he's using a Google Earth base to plot all these layers. And then our next step, when I get back in the fall, I get back to this project, is, well, truthfully, part of why I stopped is which layers begin putting in first. So
yeah,
that is just, those are all the potential points.
So that's all your data, as it were.
Those are all
they get sifted.
Those are all my envelopes.
Right.
The cells. And if I then put in the layer of this map that says Argonauts, then
right,
only those sites with Argonauts
will
go
in,
yes, and I'll be able to turn Argonauts on and off, and then I can take Argonauts against
Cadmos, actually, which is nice, because both Jason and Cadmos are early heroic initiates at Samothrace. And it's interesting. I mean, Cadmos comes sailing up the Phoenician coast. He does all kinds of foundational things on Rhodes and that area there. So he's much like Jason is to Kissick as Cadmos is to this southern Aegean area. And then he comes to Samothrace. He doesn't found the cult. He makes off with the princess. There's a big difference. I mean, and then there are later sources who say that they're still searching for Harmonia on Samothrace. And of course, he took her to Thebes and set up the one place on the mainland where we have a cult of the Cabeiboi. Although, again, there, the data, it never comes out and says, he set up the Cabeiboi cult. We just have him coming in. But he would be another interesting layer to put in. And then I would also like, ultimately, to put in layers that have to do with the various treaties, the Nesiotic League, for example. I mean, what I'm seeing so far is many of these cultural mechanisms for forming links have a specific region. And to the extent that Samothrace may be super regional, that would support it. But there's a lot of work to do.
And how are you going to put time into your life?
This is an excellent question. It's the kind of thing where what I'd like to start is a graduate seminar looking at digital classics, looking at computing in the classics, and reward. I'm enslaved. But alas, my department has no graduate program.
Yeah.
So. This
you have to do it all yourself.
Yes, and it is incredibly tedious. And this is one of my colleagues in the history department has pointed out to me. Hours and hours and hours of sheer tedium, and you don't know if it's going to get you anywhere. And here's where another aspect of digital publishing, I think, should be borne in mind. The goal for the database would not be that I keep it on my hard drive for the rest of my life, but to publish that. So say somebody then who's working on Rhodian stamp amphora handles. For them, a map like this could be potentially useful. And this keeps it being quite so mind-numbingly hopeless. Yes?
So you derived the geometries from the Barrington Atlas?
I began with the Barrington Atlas, and then I needed exact points to plot into Google Earth. So then I would go on Google Earth and look for archaeological and architectural remains.
Right, so you did georeferencing yourself in Google Earth?
Okay. Yes, and I recorded them and I handed them to my tech support and put them in.
Where I was sort of going with this question is presumably you have the same point appearing in multiple layers.
Right.
I mean, how would you deal with that? The weightings and attributes?
Yeah. This remains to be seen. And another thing that needs to be weighted quite a bit is how fuzzy some of the locations are. I mean, as you know from the Barrington Atlas, some of the places have occurred in four spots. So I have an inscription on Samothrace that says I came from this city. And I've got four possible locations in the Barrington. And none of them have any archaeological evidence to help me make a decision. So for those, I have to weight them with a confidence factor of much, much lower than something like Lumsick.
So actually, you have a kind of dichotomy in this network where you have nodes which are significant because they're connected to other nodes, but also they have a qualitative significance on their own, right?
Yes, exactly. And what we can do is, with the ability to turn things on and off, you can say, okay, if I weren't being so concerned about the accuracy of that, I would see this potentially, and then I can say, okay, then let's get back the data and get realistic and see what I've got. And the other thing is, those two nodes, Rhodes and Cuzicus, they are absolutely head and shoulders the best I have for data with that many inscriptions. Other places have one inscription. And as you can see from the image of what an inscription is at Samothrace, it's a name, and that's it. And most of them are dated on the letter styles, which makes me a bit queasy, but there's nothing I can do about it. Yes.
I think that question, or maybe the one before it, started with GIS, but it's very important to network theory.
Yes.
We talked a lot about networks, but not so much about the theory and modeling.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if, if you're finding any particular approaches to network modeling potentially helpful. It sounds like this is still the beginning, so maybe
it's very much
maybe I'm asking about what you're going to say in a year or whatever, but do you have any hints as to which direction you might be going?
At this point, I'm not sure, but I'm very much looking for one, because there are so many choices to make. And I think, you know, finding the one that will be genuinely heuristic for this and lead to another step is the big problem. I would love, if you have any suggestions.
No, I'm swimming in the mire too.
Oh, well, I was coming here for answers. I'll buy you a drink. That helped.
So do you have any inventory system in mind, or I mean, is there any something on that? I heard the Getty is doing something on that area. On the Mega, now trying it from Jordan, from the Jordan.
Yeah.
And obviously this is how Leather sort of databases relation. I mean, backed up by poly relation database models.
I haven't been, this is very much, this is a project in the beginning, and as is obvious too, I don't have the technological side and have benefited enormously from the one person I found, but it's time to branch out, and this is part of why I was so happy to come and make a plea for help.
There's a lot of learned people there.
Yes, I know, exactly.
I was just wondering whether if you've got stacks of stuff from Rhodes, I mean, Rhodes is the kind of place that distorts any image, isn't it?
It does so it very
the
much.
The fact you're looking for Rhodian is it's maybe just not quite sure about that. That you're being pulled by where the evidence happens to be.
That is the risk. That is absolutely the risk. And one of the things that I like about the potential for this is that by taking account of every point on the map, you allow the Rhodian to be its historical signature in its place. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that would have to be an enormous caveat and any modeling that comes out of that. Because it is, as you said, very atypical. And simply to have been making this kind of point, I mean, there are also a substantial number of poina and priesthoods for the Samothracian gods on the west coast of the Black Sea. However, none of them mention seafaring. None of them mentions AGC, which is an argument from silence, on the one hand, and it could be a local habit, but that's something that you have to factor into this. And it's something I'm also very uncomfortable with, and I'm not sure where this is going to take me. I think a grand caveat on anything said from Rhodes. I mean, another big problem, for example, is we have no epigraphic material from Alexandria itself, because the city has been so rebuilt. But we know that it's extraordinarily likely, given the area of Aegean it is and the reliance on long-distance seafaring, that this was a significant cult. So being too confident on where you're getting the epigraphy is a big problem.
I was interested in your suggestion that you might model the paths taken or whatever by a typical Samothrace or a typical Rhodian traveling
right.
from one place to another, and whether going by a Samothrace sped things up. And I'm wondering whether there were any precedents in some of the other digital projects that have done things like modelling the path of the Byzantine army across to Manzikert and things like that that would help with.
That would be interesting.
I don't know if that's so much a question for you as a question for Stuart, who might maybe have any suggestions on that.
The problem initially is you may need to become an initiate. Do you have to go to Samothrace? Are there
yes.
Do you definitely?
Yeah,
are there
not
other places you can go?
Right, and that's one
sort
of
the colonies, as it were.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think the most substantial, again, going from the most substantial down to the least substantial, the most substantial evidence we have for a Samothracian shrine or center is Delos.
Yeah.
And on Delos, I mean, there's nothing that indicates either in the epigraphic record or the texts or the site itself anything analogous to any kind of initiation. I mean, they have a Bothros, but that doesn't tell you too much. The other evidence for Samothracian shrines, some of them is just a line in author saying there's a Samothracian there. And we have absolutely no idea what goes on. I hesitate to make comparisons with the spread of the cult of Demeter and Licinia. Because again, I think there's been, in terms of critical history of the cult, way too much simple equations. Since it happened that way with Eleusis, it's got to happen that way with cemeteries. And that was serving a very different area of the Aegean. I mean, I think one of the most important things is where we're clustered here on the coast of Asia Minor.
But you only have to go there once.
You only have to go there once. There are people who achieve epoptea. There are not as many who do there as do at Eleusis. You can all, interestingly, at cemeteries, you can get it all in one night. You can get initiated and get epoptea and go home as a Theros. Fabulous. But you don't have to do it more than once.
Yeah. So you can't build in. It might be something you did early in your career and never did again.
Absolutely. It could be. And it's, I mean, again, it's speculation, but it's interesting to think about. In as much as it was a tricky trip, and it's very difficult to get to, did much more of the cultural usefulness of the place happen off-site, as compared to Eleusis. I mean, you know, with Theopia, you had the idea of people going back, but again, was there a festival every year? Did everybody go? Which is why, again, this is all a matter of potential. It doesn't stand to reason that because I have those dots on the map, at any given point, everybody was there at Samothrace. But I think, just with that, you tip the iceberg not to assume what's going on with the new. I think a good historical comparison of the kinds of dating that both of them is would be a useful chapter.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the historical circumstances underlying this, I think, are very, very different. Yes, please.
I mean, something that might help you a bit there. From my memory of the Sanitation Corpus, I don't recall that we have evidence for the particular package of honours that was concomitant with Proxenae that defined it in a way. But something that seems plausible in many other cases is that with a grant of something, say, like Proedria, or the right to take part in certain sorts of festival, and you know, to have a meat portion or whatever, the things that bring you into the citizen community, those are the sorts of things that might bring Proxenoi back at regular, for these regular festivals. And I'm sure this happens elsewhere. Samothrace isn't that an accessible, perhaps it would happen here as well.
It would be very interesting to know if, for example, I mean, we have one inscription from Rhodes and one from Olbia indicating that the Samothrace associate did a procession across the town from one thing to the other, an association with the sacrifice. And so, was that privilege articulated at home as well as at Samothrace? None of the inscriptions from Samothrace go into any more detail on what a pharaoh's got when he was on the island or what the folks were expected to do. One of the intriguing things for me is Samothrace was itself so poor, other than the sanctuary. I mean, Samothrace's one great export was initiation, was experience.
In a way, the thing that we make the network of Proxenoi, or wanted to make it like this, but it doesn't have to be most economically based, was if you had celebrations involved in transport trade.
Yes.
That is, so not things that required resources on the celebrations itself. Yeah. And there you might have a slightly different model of how this works.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too, there are enough people on celebrations who are there as part of battleships to suggest, but if you were to, and I haven't done this, you know, stack up the number who are there as, there's one pirate fighting ship out of Chios on one side of the Stele and a bunch of Romans on the other side. It's just the two of them fighting together, the pirates of the centuries. A significant portion would fall in the military camp as opposed to the economic one. But then what do these people do afterwards? Then they go home and set up a demonstration club in honor of their admiral.
Well, and presumably part of the reason they're bringing this here is that when you have a certain sort of victory at sea, this is one of the places you go to commemorate it, just as
yes.
You might, certain shrines have that sort of function elsewhere. So it wouldn't necessarily say anything about these people's ordinary connection with Samothrace itself, but it might still.
Yeah, it would be so nice to know more about that dedicated ship. I mean, right now it's a 6-inch high monument, but it was one of the first things you would see when you came in up into the sanctuary from the seashore. It really would dominate the site. And then, of course, the Nikkei on her treadmill is above the site, above the theater itself. So I can imagine that what we've lost includes a great number of those kinds of dedications.
Yeah.
again, going through the corpus again, I'm really attracted to the idea that some people were celebrating the Sabbath race without even necessarily being initiates. I mean, this is another hypothesis. I mean, I think you can do as well, support your local samothrakiastai, who are also celebrating, you know, eight other people. It might not serve the interests of this group of koina to be so exclusive about it, but rather to base entry on how much you're willing to give, to pay, to support. Again, and that's purely hypothetical, but I had not thought of that as a possibility before. But the more I see this as the real working out of the cult has of itself.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes?
Maybe I'll give you more satisfaction with this question. my mind started wandering, as maybe it should with a topic like this, when you answered the question about how people had to go there. You couldn't be an initiate without actually going there. But could they have virtually gone there and or complained having gone there? Surely the mythical precedents will have done this. We can't verify that the mythic characters, since they don't really exist, you know, were actually there.
Right.
So couldn't the same go for the initiates? And I'm sure there's plenty of examples through history where people might have not quite made it. But is there some way that maybe if you look at this project from a backwards perspective, you could almost go around proving who was a real initiate and who was a fake, just having us on?
It's interesting, the gods have no sense of humor. Really, I mean, the fact that the punishment for irritating them was death would mitigate against that, although the fact that, I mean, our first evidence is comic, we're kind of recommending taking a looser approach. It would be very difficult to have, I mean, it would be just two or three, I think, ultimately, that you could, but it's the names, you know, and then you have the names floating in space because they're not always people that show up someplace else.
But the problem being, you can't verify. I mean, it's a little bit like, I mean, I study vases, so it's a little bit like when you say, well, these vases were made in such and such a place.
Right.
And everyone's all confident in all the museums in the world have those labels. And then, you know, someone who does a petrographic analysis says, well, no, they were made on the other side of the world.
Yeah. It's an attractive idea. I mean, and I'd like to pursue it, like so many. I need more time.
Well, I think that's where your chronology comes in.
Right, yes.
I think the tendency in later periods to sort of adopt. So,
right.
I mean, the kind of exporting of cults in the Roman period.
Right.
One thinks of immediately, and that's where I think it would be extremely interesting to take your letters and then work out how you're going to apply your chronological letters.
That would be interesting. And one of the nice things, too, is coming to the Roman period. I mean, the Romans made different use of the cult than the Greeks did intellectually. The way they presented in their letters, they were, there was a substantial amount of awareness of the Samothracian gods at Rome. I mean, they're there on the spina of the Fricks Maximus, along with a lot of other gods like Dioscuroi and Cybele, who are perfectly at home with that semantic level. Mm-hmm. The fact that a chariot disaster is called a naufragium, mm-hmm. suggests to me that Romans were not unaware of the fact that this was a god who could do safe at sea. Varro was the one to start with on that.
But I think one of the attractions of this using this approach is that there are certain ways of putting chronology and space together, mm-hmm. which is just incredibly difficult in any other way. You just don't quite see it.
You know, I think one nice thing to do would be take those ones that we absolutely can be positive on the date.
Yes.
And so turning on just that layer, what do I have that I can work with?
Yeah.
And having it stored this way would mean that I don't have to then start again at the beginning with an inscription go through and say, which ones can I actually be positive about? Cicero's uncle was an initiate. Romans stopped by during the Mithridatic Wars. Mm. I mean, for them, for that layer, for the Roman connections, we have a lot more verifiable details to connect, to link them to things going on around Aegean.
But it would be very, very interesting if you have a layer of firm connections.
Yes.
Another layer of tentative.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I'm sure there's a lot of oral tradition, because you said trust and all these things.
Yes.
This is really an oral sort of aspect of the culture. So you have a tentative, like, sort of similarity in monuments and gods and all these things, which imply there's some tracing connection or something.
Yeah.
it will be interesting to see if this, but this is another project.
Yes.
Can we thank Sandra one more time?